Idomeneo is Mozart's first mature opera, and it remains one of his most profound and musically satisfying. Although its premiere took place on January 27, 1781, just after the composer's 25th birthday, the opera provides one of Mozart's most searching explorations of some cherished Mozartian themes: the triumph of love over hatred, and of reconciliation and mercy over revenge and rigidity. Unlike most of his best-loved works, it is an opera seria with no admixture of comedy, and although it contains haunting stories of romantic and familial love, it is also a political opera, whose three acts all end with choral singing and with a statement about how the choices of the characters affect the political community. In both of these respects, it has strong links to La Clemenza di Tito, one of Mozart's last two operas. But Idomeneo's libretto is far better written, and Mozart got a chance to write all of its music, including the recitatives, which time pressure prevented him from writing himself in the later work. In 1780, Mozart and librettist Giambattista Varesco were commissioned by Karl Theodor, Elector of Bavaria, to write an opera for a court performance. Mozart seems to have had a key role in the choice of the subject. Varesco's libretto was based on a French drama by Antoine Danchet, which had already been turned into an opera by another composer in 1712. Many letters between Mozart and his father Leopold inform us about the opera's development. We learn that key roles were fitted to singers whom Mozart preferred, and that the libretto and music required ultimately many cuts in order to be suitable for the court performance. The work premiered at the Cuvilliés Theater in Munich. Mozart was not happy with many of the cuts, and today the opera is typically performed virtually uncut. A second performance in Vienna in 1786 occasioned a major rewrite of some scenes, the restoration of many cuts, and a total recasting of the role of Idamante. Sung by a castrato soprano at the premiere, the role was adapted for a tenor in the Vienna version. Today, most productions return to the original scoring, giving the role to a female mezzo-soprano. This permits the close harmonies in the Ilia Idamante duet that are among the opera's most moving effects, and the exploration of Idamante's gender-atypical gentleness. Like Sesto in Clemenza and Cherubino in The Marriage of Figaro, he is a tender, loving type of male who eschews the common male competition for honor and domination, while still slaying the sea serpent. So it seems fitting, both dramatically and musically, that we honor through this casting Mozart's critique of traditional gender norms. The founding theorists of opera during the 17th century were obsessed by the Greeks and the Romans and by the genre of tragedy, since they were attempting to wrest vocal music away from ecclesiastical control and to create a secular genre of music drama that allowed the fortunes of individual characters to take center stage, as they could not in religious choral music. They also appropriated the Greek tragic idea of a universe in which morality and justice do not reign, and individuals must wrestle with blind amoral forces, creating love and justice, if at all, from within themselves. It is no surprise that Mozart followed this lead, committed throughout his adult life to the Enlightenment ethos of the Freemasons, which replaced religious authority with secular ideas of brotherhood, equality, and freedom. Mozart clearly found in Greek and Roman sources the opportunity to create a political universe in which the gods are not moral and in which human beings must take upon themselves the task of creating a decent political community. Choosing a story in which the gods demand a ridiculous and immoral sacrifice, he seems to present a critique of traditional religion, perhaps even alluding critically to the Abraham-Isaac story. But in keeping with his Masonic optimism about the power of human freedom and reason, the world of Idomeneo is not the Greek tragic universe of blind fate. The opera's universe is an ultimately untragic place in which people really can chart their own course, and human reason proves capable of surmounting and replacing divine harshness. The great 19th century musicologist and critic Eduard Hanslick judged Idomeneo inferior to Mozart's more Shakespearean operas, his comparison, which, like Shakespeare's tragedies, contain a mixture of tragedy and comedy. Hanslick was short-sighted. Although it is true that Idomeneo has no comic scenes or characters, it is its own remarkable mixture of tragedy with happy love story, and indeed a story that ends up subverting and rewriting the world of tragedy, bringing about peace and reconciliation on the political plane as well. The opera is set in the aftermath of the bitter Trojan War, which, as Homer tells us, brought, quote, thousandfold pains, end quote, even on the victorious Greeks, and more or less wiped out the Trojans. Ilia, one of the last of the Trojan royal family, is a captive along with the other prisoners, quote, bereft of father and brothers, end quote. Able at first to see the world only in terms of war and enmity, she feels at first a terrible conflict between her loyalty to her family and her love for the Greek prince Idomante. Quickly, however, the drama begins to reshape the world. Idomante has what we might call a more Mozartian view of loyalties, insisting that reconciliation can bring warring sides together in harmony and love. He frees the Trojan prisoners, quote, now I will break their bonds and give them consolation, end quote. As the opera progresses, it is Idomante's capacity for love, soon joined by his father's, that propels the plot, bringing it ultimately to its happy conclusion. The central conceit of the plot is Idomeneo's promise, in return for his rescue from the storm, to sacrifice the first person he sees on landing to the greedy god of the sea. Because that person is his beloved son, a terrible calamity seems in store. The sea god's rigidity is depicted already in the overture, along, however, with a chromatic theme working against it, which we come to associate with human initiatives against cruel fate.
Thank you.
Greek tragedies sometimes have happy endings. Aristotle preferred this sort, but only by sheer luck, some intervening deus ex machina. In Idomeneo, by contrast, it is the evolving story of the power of love that prepares the way for the final scene. Idomeneo insists that his inner human natura rebels against the deed commanded by impersonal nature. And all the human characters join in chorus to criticize the sea god's behavior, quote, abate your anger, your rigidity, end quote, in a very un-Greek and rather Masonic denouement. The gods yield to the power of love and reason. A voice whose announces that, quote, love has triumphed, end quote, and that the new political community will be ruled by a loving male-female duo, Ilia and Idomante, prefiguring the dual initiation of Pamina and Tamino at the end of the Magic Flute. Instead of a monarchy based on fear, we have a new regime based on freedom, flexibility, reciprocity, and love. But how did we reach this point? Mozart's subtle and original musical language shows us what the libretto itself could not, showing us what tenderness and flexibility can be and do. It is remarkable that in all of Mozart's other major works, there is no happy duet between two truly loving lovers. Either the lovers are in conflict, Susanna and Figaro, the Count and the Countess, or they're ill-matched, Sesto and Vitellia, or the love is based upon deception, Don Giovanni and Zerlina, the two pairs of lovers in Così fan tutte. Ilia and Idomante are the exception. Idomante has been a tender, peace-loving lover from the beginning. Ilia, who initially sees things in terms of implacable opposition between enemies, gradually comes to see the world his way. And in the beautiful Zeffiretti Lusinghieri, gently caressing breezes, that opens Act Three, her long, delicate phrases are musical caresses sent through the breeze to her lover. When he arrives, they sing the remarkable duet, Sio non moro a questi accenti, if I do not die at these words, in which the two voices, in close-knit harmony, express the joy of trusting reciprocity, looking forward to happiness. Quote, ah, our happiness overcomes the cruel anguish we have suffered. Our passion conquers all. Although this unique duet precedes the yielding of the gods, it prefigures it, and its exemplary beauty causes it. Love's nature makes nature yield. Yeah. Of equal importance is the opera's delicate depiction of filial and paternal love in the whole unfolding of the Idamante-Idomeneo relationship and in Ilia's gradual opening toward trust in her former enemy as a father in the exquisite Act II aria, Se il padre perdei, if I have lost my father. Idomeneo is the opera's title character, and he is depicted as a military hero, a loving father, and a decent ruler. His role is written for a powerful tenor. And yet, in the end, he is not the opera's hero. At the end, the voice says he must step aside and give the kingdom to Idamante and Ilia. Why? It seems that Idomeneo is a bridge figure between the old and the new worlds. He is loving and courageous, but also a dupe of religious superstition. He makes a foolish promise to irrational forces, and that promise dooms him to kill what he loves. He sees no way to extricate himself from that predicament, while Idamante charts a new course from the very start of the opera with his merciful freeing of the prisoners and his desire to rule by love. So far, we have left out one of the major characters, Elettra, who has some of the opera's most dramatic and dazzling music in the two towering revenge arias, Tutte nel cor vi sento, in my heart I feel you all, addressing the Furies, goddesses of revenge, and near the opera's end, Doreste Diace of Orestes and Ajax, again referring to her internal Furies. And it was fitting to leave her isolated because she isolates herself. She never changes, nor does she respond to any other character. In her single-minded dedication to vengeance and the Furies, in her renunciation of, quote, love, mercy, pity, end quote, she belongs to the old cruel world and refuses the lure of the new world. As she finishes her first aria, the ensuing music of the storm outside is very similar to the music she has just been singing about her insides, Mozart's way of showing that she embodies the older world of cruelty and rigidity, untempered by gentleness or tenderness. Elettra's music is spectacular, but ultimately solipsistic and hard, even ugly. Her arias, both the early and the late, have a breathless character that a good singer will mimic, with, of course, supreme breath control. Revenge, after all, takes your breath away. Retributive anger operates as the opposite of Ilia's tender love, which extends itself in long, breeze-like phrases. And in the final aria, sung after the voice has announced the triumph of love, Elettra simply sings herself to death. Singing of suicide, quote, Electo's torch brings me death, or a sword shall end my pain, end quote. She verges on vocal collapse with the ugly cackling pyrotechnics of the aria's end. And then, done with the aria, she simply does collapse, in most productions and in lyrics, killed, apparently, by her own exhausting emotions of anger and hatred.
Oh,
Elektra's collapse is sad because Mozart lets us see that she does have a softer side. In her first aria, we encounter a more delicate theme as she bids farewell to her former emotions of, quote, love, mercy, and compassion, end quote. And in Act Two, briefly, she sings an aria expressing love. Before, disappointed, she reverts to a harsh retributivism. Joseph Kerman, the author of Opera as Drama, says that Elektra is far from the center of the work, a peripheral character. And in a way, this is true, but it doesn't show us that she is irrelevant. Like the Queen of the Night in The Magic Flute, she is an anti-type, the exemplar of an older realm with no reciprocity and no compassion. And what Mozart shows us is that this way of being in the world leads ultimately to exhaustion and burnout. Ilia and Idamante, by contrast, lead forward to personal and political regeneration and to happiness. I hope you enjoyed this lyric commentary on Mozart's Idomeneo. I am Martha C. Nussbaum, Ernst Freund Distinguished Service Professor of Law and Ethics at the University of Chicago. Lyrics commentaries are made possible through the generous support of the Patrick G. and Shirley Welsh Ryan Foundation in memory of their parents. The music that you have heard is generously furnished by Warner Classics and is available for purchase on iTunes.